Hello, friends. Today is, what is today? The 30, let's see what we have here. 28th, yeah. This is the 28th of June. I'm finally able to come back and continue with the Taurus chapter, which I'd like to finish before long so we can get into the second part of the book. So this is then the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 108. And I'll just read the paragraph that we had dealt with before. Then the disciple, an expression of the Christ life in its early manifested stages, having transmuted desire into aspiration, begins his career objectively and in full consciousness, not simply aspirationally and instinctually, in the sign Taurus and on the wings of aspiration. Interesting to consider that Taurus will be winged. Usually you think of the bull or the cow as a very on-the-earth type of creature. But here, well, the cow jumped over the moon. That's interesting. On the wings of aspiration, proceeds towards Virgo, and being both the mother and the child, enters into the house of labor. The birth is not taking place in Taurus yet. This is a reversal of the wheel, and we began with discussing Capricorn, Virgo, and Taurus just a little earlier in the previous discussion. Now we're talking about the reversal of the wheel, and from that house, the disciple in due time arrives at Capricorn, where he finally subdues matter. There's a great deal of the power of will and imposition in Capricorn. And though it is, in a way, the most material of all the signs at first, it becomes later extremely ethereal when the upper triangle of the diamond is activated, where he finally subdues matter, form, or concrete expression to divine uses. Capricorn is one of the most utilitarian of all the signs, to divine uses and purposes, always purposeful in the later days, and thus demonstrates the triumph and the potency of the Christ life. We begin to see that triumph in Scorpio. Warrior am I, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. But that's the disciple emerging triumphant, and now we need to see the soul itself triumphing, and the man then identifies entirely as the soul on the higher mental plane and has, at the third initiation, achieved causal consciousness. So these are earth signs, and we've discussed them in the first part of this little discussion, and also later, earlier rather, as proceeding in two directions. Okay, I think what I'll do here is give us a little more room. Right. So now we begin with 108. All of these statements the Tibetan makes are so profound. They require deep concentration over time. I was just recently analyzing the statement that he makes about harmlessness, for instance, which he considers so very important. Harmlessness is the expression of the life of the man who realizes himself to be everywhere. Well, right there you have a sentence that requires weeks, if not months, of close attention. Who lives consciously as a soul? You could isolate that. What does it mean to live consciously as a soul, whose nature is love? Meditate on that. Whose method is inclusiveness? What would it mean for us if our method were inclusiveness? And for whom all forms are alike, in that they veil and hide the light, so ponder on that, and are but externalizations of the one infinite being. Ponder on that. Here are several short phrases which invite actually years of pondering. And thus it is with the Tibetan's material. We can skim over the surface, but esoteric realization and experience does not come that way. It does not come through merely knowing and understanding the words which he speaks, but from a deeper penetration into those words until the energy states which those words represent actually dawn upon our consciousness and are perceived, are experienced. So it doesn't pay to rush when developing oneself in the field of spiritual occultism. It will take time, and, well, eventually we will prove, I suppose, that how we normally consider time is illusory in any case. So we are, slowly pondering the Tibetan's words here. The secret of the triangles or triplicities in their fourfold expression is as yet an unexplored aspect of astrological research, and one with which we will later concern ourselves, not so much later because we are entering the second part of the book, and oftentimes a triangle is seen as suspended above a fourth point, which is its point of expression. But we will see what he means by the fourfold expression, whether he's dealing with the elements particularly, or whether he's dealing with the different areas of the human energy system and how triangles may relate to those areas. For instance, within the monad, within the triad, within the soul, within the personality, or within the various vehicles of the personality. We'll see what he means by fourfold expression. Okay. This sign Taurus is therefore the 11th sign. I think what I'll do here is get myself a little bracket. Yes, it's therefore the 11th sign upon the ordinary wheel. The ordinary wheel, we know, the clockwise wheel, beginning often with Aries, moving towards Pisces and then Aquarius, and finally ending in Taurus. That's one way to turn the wheel. Of course, there are other ways the Tibetan seems to use, and he sometimes begins with Pisces as if it were the first sign, in which case Taurus would be the 10th. This sign Taurus is therefore the 11th sign upon the ordinary wheel of exoteric emphasis and life. The personality, the elemental life, the lunar lords, including the great lunar lord, the personality, these are emphasized in the clockwise direction. Preceding each new cycle of incarnated expression, which would be begun in Aries, as the individual descends into incarnation, which he does, of course, on the clockwise wheel, and when he takes an astral shell, he definitely comes into a Taurian cycle. But now, you know, from this point of view, let's see if I can have this correct. Okay. Let's look at this one, two. I'm going to see if I can simply... Yes, there we go. Okay. Yes. From this point of view, he seems to be beginning with Aries and going in the clockwise direction for Taurus, although I suppose there can be the sense in which Aries represents the descent into incarnation when you are considering things from the point of view of the clockwise wheel. It's as if you build up a certain mental orientation in Gemini, consolidate desire in Taurus, and finally take the plunge into incarnation in Aries. Usually it's the other way around. The mental intention is expressed in Aries, and the desire is consolidated in Taurus. The etheric vitalization occurs in Gemini, and finally the incarnation itself occurs in Cancer. So as the individual descends in incarnation, and when he takes an astral shell, he definitely comes into a Taurus cycle from the point of view of the, this is from the point of view of the astral, this is from the point of view of the counterclockwise wheel also, and especially. Okay. For it is desire which impels to rebirth, a sign, Taurus, a sign of incentive and of impulsion. There's a great push forward with this sign, even though it may be at first has the quality of Tamas and is somewhat resistive, has a degree of inertia for which Vulcan can be considered responsible. For it is desire which impels to rebirth, and it takes the potency of Taurus to bring this about. If there are many, let's say, good ideas which never see incarnation, and you kind of wonder whether there are human beings who intend to incarnate, but without sufficient desire do not do so. So there is a Taurian influence in the taking of the astral shell and in the concentration of desire. As this subject concerns the astrology of the astral vehicle, which looks like it's a very interesting subject in its own respect, we will not deal with it further, for that is a phase of research for which humanity is not ready. Perhaps we're dealing at the moment with the etheric nature and with the physical nature, and our concentration is upon clearing the ethers so that they will be clean of the negative types of astral influences which incline toward the materialization of that which is undesirable. So, but it's tantalizing, isn't it, to think of the idea of the astrology of the astral vehicle. Perhaps when the time comes for humanity to really begin clearing the astral vehicle as a whole, I mean, right now, certain people work on the dissipation of glamour, but it's not a very widespread practice. Perhaps then, when humanity is ready to stand with massed intent as it faces the great difficulties of the present condition of the astral vehicle, it will be time then to deal with the astrology of the astral vehicle. It is hinted by some researchers that the astrology of the astral vehicle can be determined by a certain chart, which we call the animation chart, the Neptune chart, and is arrived at a point in the prenatal process which we call the quickening, when the heart itself starts to beat, and we can take a look at Neptune as related to that heart. It's all very obscure, and these are hints that are given. Perhaps charts of that nature do tell us something about the astral vehicle, but we really do not have the sufficient research on it to determine whether this is the case. The sign is also the second subjective sign on the reverse wheel. There are three subjective signs we remember. Okay, three subjective signs. They are Aries, Taurus, and Gemini. So it's the second sign, and because it is the second, it has to do with the astral body, counting from below, the second from below, just as the six from above. The astral plane is that, and the astral body is made of substance of the astral plane. So this sign is also the second subjective sign on the reverse wheel, preparatory to the conscious recognition of the right relation of the dualities in Gemini, which is not only an etheric factor, it seems especially a mental factor. It's interesting that Gemini is associated with both the etheric body, but as well the mentality. There is a relationship between dualities, of course. The astral plane is the plane on which the dual forces can be found. But it may not be conscious and it may not be intelligent. It may simply exist. So we are to ponder on this. The right relation of dualities as well can be considered to be the pairs of opposites, both soul and personality, and this is achieved under Gemini, where it is desirable that the astral, that the etheric body be animated by soul energy and not simply by personality force. And perhaps in Gemini, this is worked out under the contrast between Castor and Pollux. Pollux, in this case, representing the soul, and Castor representing the various forces of the personality. So we are to ponder on this, and we have just a little, but we certainly have not exhausted the pondering. In this sign, we have consequently the following qualities or aspects in juxtaposition. We may remember he did this for us in relation to Libra. Okay. So, these aspects in juxtaposition. Desire, that's the first factor arising in the Taurian individual, or even if he's not an individual yet, let's say the Taurian person in the early days of incarnation, even associated with the second petal of the egoic lotus, wherein there can be a concentration upon the desire aspect. Desire leading to aspiration upon the reverse wheel. So on the unreverse wheel, desire rules for a long time. Blindness. Desire is blind, we are told. So let's just put that in just to remind ourselves of the factor. Desire is blind. Then the mad rush of the bull, we're told on page 330, the Taurus rushes blindly until Sagittarius directs. I believe that's the case. Go to page 331. You see, have to have esoteric astrology. Maybe it's 332. Yes, Taurus rushes blindly until Sagittarius directs. Here it is. Darkness, the darkness of the labyrinth, leading finally to the light, Theseus emerging from the labyrinth, holding the thread which Ariadne gave to him, the way out of the maze, and the rescue from that being we call the Minotaur, which has a great deal of the bull in it. It's a man-eating, man-destroying being. So Taurus is connected to the darkness of the instinctual nature when it is not led by the illumined mind. Okay. Okay. Leading finally into the light. These are the factors. These are the contrasts. And the death of consciousness in lower form, leading at last to liberation, freedom in the light, freedom upon the cosmic ethers, freedom in the light and upon the cosmic ethers. Taurus is, after all, a sign of liberation and one of the great factors concerning the career of the Gautama, the Buddha, some 2,500 years ago, was the type of liberation to which his system led. Freedom from desire, and when desire impels downward, attracting us and attaching us to the worlds of form, consciousness is confined and really dead compared to the higher realizations which are possible when we are liberated from form. In a way, we're dealing with the fourth initiation here and the connection of Taurus to it. Taurus is connected with the fourth initiation. Yes. And we have the shattering of the causal body under Vulcan. The hammer blow. There are many ways to destroy a causal body. Some of this is discussed in letters on occult meditation in the early teens, in the teens of that book, page 15, 16, 17, right in there. 18 perhaps. And Taurus, under using Vulcan, is also involved in the depths of isolation or realized isolation. The realization that one is not yet liberated and the suffering that comes therefrom. The fourth ray is connected with the fourth initiation, and we know that through Taurus, the fourth ray expresses itself especially. I wouldn't be surprised if we have Scorpio involved in some way in the fourth initiation. All of those planets, well, the entire fixed cross can be considered to be involved in the fourth initiation. Of course, we're not really on any cross, but there are tendencies in the fixed cross which lead to the results achieved at the fourth initiation. The great release of the light when the causal body is shattered, the sort of supernova of the causal body, the destruction of the causal body, which is a Leonian structure. So Leo is involved, as Scorpio dealing death, not working as it does in the first three signs, where there's a peculiar testing potency, as the Tibetan discusses, but still leading to the death of the causal body, or contributing to it, with its rulership coming under, partially under Pluto. And then Aquarius, in which the third and fourth initiation are frequently taken, and Aquarius being the great sign of liberation and representing the cosmic ethers into which the consciousness is at last liberated, being freed from confinement on the higher mental plane. So even though no cross is dominant at the fourth initiation, there are so many factors related to the fixed cross which lead to the type of experience at the fourth degree. In other words, if you carry those fixed cross signs to their ultimate expression, they do pave the way for the type of realization and energy experience and manifestation which occurs at the fourth degree. Okay, moving onward here. In the last analysis, we come back to the eternal dualities. What is that? Spirit and matter, leading as they ever do to the interplay of the polar opposites. When we speak of the dualities, we mean essentially spirit and matter, but also soul and form, or soul and personality. Leading as they ever do to the interplay of the polar opposites. And, you know, for a long time, once we enter the second tier of the egoic lotus, the possibility of the interplay of soul and personality will exist. Once we enter the third tier, there are already hints that spirit and matter can begin their interplay. Leading as they ever do to the interplay of the polar opposites, to the cyclic ebb and flow of the inner life and the outer periphery of expression. As DK has said, there are some lives where the inner life is really in the flow stage and it is being experienced on the outer planes, and other times where it seems to be ebbing. And there are periods in any incarnation when this is so. And I suppose if we bring it down analogously to what goes on in the day, we can find periods of ebb and flow, certainly of vitality and probably of soul realization and presence as well. So leading as they ever do to the interplay of the polar opposites, to the cyclic ebb and flow of the inner life, and to the outer peripheral and the outer peripheral expression, and to that attraction and repulsion, which leads to a steady shift of the attracting force to an ever higher and wider appeal. In other words, the normal attraction and repulsion is directional. Attraction and repulsion. Well, let's call it this way so we can make it a little easier. The dynamic of attraction and repulsion leads ever higher. to ever higher types of attraction. So if we pass through this interplay of attraction and repulsion, eventually the higher will win, and we will find that we are repelled by the lower and attracted to that which is ever higher. In other words, once there is a victory in this dynamic over that which is lower, a new point of polarization is established, and the higher point becomes now the lower point in comparison with another source of attraction, and the same drama continues. So the attraction repulsion, which leads to a steady shift of the attracting force to an ever higher and wider appeal. So there is, in a way, an ascent of the attracting force. Let's call it that. Ascent, I just spell, ascent of the attracting force. It is the secret of eventual synthesis, which is the final illumination, not just the illumination of the third degree or the various illuminations which come along at the different initiations, seen through the eye of Taurus. And certainly Taurus will take us to levels of illumination which are even beyond the human initiatory system. I mean, if Sirius, a single star, can be the initiator of our solar logos, then Taurus, a great constellation, will certainly have the effect on lives, the illuminative effect on lives, far greater than the human. But anyway, it is the secret of the eventual synthesis, which is the final illumination for humanity, let us say, seen through the eye of Taurus. So it is, what can we say, that the inner eye reveals the growing light experienced at progressive initiations. It is for this reason that this sign is regarded as being one of universal moment, and I suppose of moment to our great solar logos and his process, because the word universal really does have to do with our own particular solar system, which is sometimes referred to as a little universe. So of moment to the solar logos, being one of universal moments of great and constant activity under the impulse of material desire or the urge of the divine will later when recognized and sensed. So Taurus, you know, has been connected with three factors which we realize are desire, aspiration, and will. The triangle of expression is one of potent energies, but, you know, a sign of universal moment, and here is so much activity connected with the sign Taurus. The usual prejudices that we see in ordinary astrology about the inertness of the Taurian individual are simply not true under so many circumstances. We are certainly in a rather materialistic age at the present time. We're in the Aryan age, which is the fifth, and therefore is connected with the line 1357, which is the line of matter form, in a sense. The first ray, which is the head of that line, is responsible for building and maintaining the physical vehicle, and there's so much about Taurus, which is extremely physical and has to do, we were told, with the health of the physical vehicle. The instrument, the physical instrument is that which you own, the ownership of Taurus here being asserted, that magnetic relation of the inner individual and his instrument, misunderstood as ownership, or misunderstood as misidentification. One thinks one is that which one simply owns. So it is for this reason that the sign is regarded as one of universal moment. I sometimes wonder about this final illumination, whether Taurus is not involved in that. I mean, we even have the fifth initiation called the Revelation. The fifth initiation is called the Revelation. And it has a great deal of light connected with it, a release of light. Now, the connection of Leo to the fifth initiation, being the fifth sign, is obvious, but perhaps Taurus is involved there as well. We know there's a great type of let's just call it symbolically a supernova that goes on at the fourth degree, when there is a release of tremendous light because the causal body is destroyed, so Taurus could be involved there. And we do know through Vulcan that it is involved in the fourth degree, and certainly at the preliminary illumination which occurs at the third degree, Taurus can have its place in this realization of the light sublime or the light supernal, moving along there with Capricorn as well. Vulcan is involved in this release of light from matter, and Vulcan is the ruler of Taurus and also the planet implicated in the third decanate, one of the planets implicated in the third decanate of Capricorn. Okay, so there's a triangle of expression here. These triangles of expression, desire, aspiration, will, if we could just remember these three with respect to Taurus and realizing that no one of them necessarily operates all the time. They represent pretty much the stages through which humanity passes. And if we were to go to page 332 and 333, we'd see the undeveloped man, advanced man, and disciple initiate. We could superimpose upon this categorization desire, aspiration, will. Man experiencing and expressing desire, the disciple expressing aspiration, not only the aspirant expressing that, but the disciple must do so, and the initiate finally expressing will. Materiality is associated with man and with desire. Duality, in which the pairs of opposites is sensed, is associated with aspiration, because from the lower of the pairs of opposites goes forth that energy which aspires to achieve polarization within the higher. And divinity is connected with will. Divinity, interestingly enough, is that term often associated with the monad, whereas spirituality with the triad and soul. Form then is associated with desire. Desire is for form, aspiration is for the soul, and the will is intended toward the realization of spirit, whether in form, in soul, or on its own high level. And finally, humanity subject to desire, hierarchy full of aspiration toward Shambhala, and Shambhala being the source of will. So reading these in the vertical way, we might, certain ideas might come to us. Desire, man, materiality, form. Aspiration, the disciple. Duality, soul, hierarchy. Will, the initiate. Divinity, spirit, Shambhala. Now, continuing, and these triplicities, of course, can be easily spoken by the mind, but the realization of what they mean, realization is the key to occult understanding. And it takes work to take a word or a concept and realize, i.e. experience, the energy behind it. This is the labor. This is the labor to which we are committed if we would become true spiritual occultists. I always include the word spiritual when discussing occultism, even though it is implied in those who understand theosophy. I mean, if you're not a spiritual person, there's no true occultism. The negative occultism has usurped the attention of humanity, and when we use the word occult, it takes on that creepy kind of quality, which is, you know, of the devil, satanic, evil, all that. But true occultism is the science of the hidden energies and how they can best be applied in order to express the plan of God, our planetary logos, and eventually see that his purpose is manifested. So the true occultism is in fact the science of subtle energies and the manipulation of those energies for divine purposes. This we must get across to humanity so that our particular field is not viewed with a prejudiced or prejudicial suspicion, which it does not deserve. I ring these changes constantly as the consideration of them intelligently grasped will lead eventually and inevitably to their fusion in your individual consciousness. So DK, Master DK, is always repeating the story of the crypticities until they become such a natural way of thinking for us that when we look at the world, we can always see the trinities in operation, and that will clarify our understanding of an otherwise maze-like and bewildering process, the maze in which the ordinary human consciousness is constantly engaged and cannot free itself. It is not my intention here to say much. It is not my intention to say much here anent the fixed cross of which Taurus is one of the arms. I've dealt with this in several places, he says, and indeed he has, when considering with you the constellations Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. I would therefore refer you to my earlier comments, and we always have to go back. The Tibetan has written, as I say, one big book, and we must ever circle within that book and pick up hints that we can relate to what we're just reading, just as what we're just reading relates to the prior statements. And in this way, a synthetic grasp of all that has been said, especially along the second ray line of meticulous entirety, will be possible. I would therefore refer you to my earlier comments. Scorpio is, as you will have realized, the dominant arm through which the most effective potency flows upon the reversed wheel where advanced humanity is concerned. Well, it's dominant for the moment. There will always be dominant arms of the cross depending upon the period of human and planetary evolution through which we are passing. And now humanity has become the world disciple, not a disciple of the third degree, certainly, but all over the world, humanity is to be considered the rising disciple. It has been, in a way, the aspirant, and there are still many human beings who are not even aspirants, of course, but considered as a whole, humanity is moving towards the first initiation, and for that reason it must be considered a being which is in the process of learning spirituality. And that's what a disciple does, learns about spirituality and how to apply spirituality in the life which is occurring within the three worlds. So Scorpio is dominant at the moment, especially where advanced humanity is concerned, because advanced humanity is struggling between the pairs of opposites. We remember what it tells us of Scorpio. He is, for advanced humanity, the fighter with duality. Isn't that what's said here? If we go down just a little bit to find Taurus. Yeah, conflict with duality, the fighter. Well, that's where humanity is at the moment, fighting things out through great wars where the human soul, the soul of humanity, and humanity's dweller on the threshold are locked in dire combat. And even though the war has subsided on the outer plane, it is still raging on the inner planes and runs the risk of breaking out yet again, as the Tibetan has advised us. So it's the most effective potency, and it is largely a fourth ray potency flowing through this particular constellation, although the first ray, I think, will be found to be one of the constellational energies of Taurus. I don't see how it's possible that only one energy, ray energy, flow through a great constellational lord when even the Earth has all seven energies flowing through it with a dominant 3, namely 1, 2, and 3, or 3, 2, and 1. The dominant arm through which the most effective potency flows upon the reverse wheel where advanced humanity is concerned, because it is the testing sign for humanity, testing upon the physical plane to make sure that all that has been understood and considered to be important is worked out actually and physically upon the physical level and thus proven. We have to always prove for ourselves that what we think we know, we actually do know and can express. So proven is the word. And I'll just try to get that word in red so it stands out as that which I write as opposed to that which the Tibetan is writing. So it's the most effective potency where advanced humanity is concerned, because advanced humanity is responsible for proving the outer effectiveness of its inner resolutions, its inner understanding. The testing sign for humanity, and that's all of humanity right now, really, we're all being extremely tested, and maybe no more so than in the decades that lie ahead, especially the decade which lies ahead here. DK did tell us that the Shambhala impact, this particular one, need not be as destructive as the ones in the past, but we have yet to determine whether we will be able to avoid that type of destructiveness. Okay, the testing sign for humanity, and the one in which the human being reaches the depths or attains the heights. Well, the depths are also reached in Capricorn, you know, the depths of materiality, but the, I don't know, maybe the depths of iniquity are reached in Scorpio. We are told that the man can become, as we have learned, the monster of selfishness. Unity of selfishness, the monster. So those would be the depths that he is referring to, or attains the heights of the first three initiations particularly, because Scorpio is involved in all those three initiations, though not necessarily uninvolved in the fourth. Taurus is the dominant stream of energy upon this fixed cross where average man is concerned, because average man is involved with desire rather than aspiration, and is not being tested in the same respect. Now elsewhere, I think on page, 490 and following, and this is what we're going to be studying a little bit later, we're not there yet, we are told of the signs which give the greatest expression of a particular ray at this particular time. And what does it say? That Taurus ray 4 is not active exoterically, as the fourth ray is not in manifestation at this time. And yet, we're just being told here as well that for average man, Taurus is the dominant stream of energy upon the fixed cross. So both have to be held. There's probably some higher esoteric expression of Taurus, which is not yet in expression, and when the fourth ray enters in the year 2025 and following, and when disciples come in upon the fourth ray, perhaps we will have the emergence in beauty of the implications of the energy of the Taurian constellation and its fourth ray. I think it's Master Moria who has said, "With beauty thou hast the light." Well, think of that. Taurus, the great sign of illumination, and Taurus, a major sign of beauty, conveying the fourth ray. So anyway, we just take this at face value. Taurus is the dominant stream of energy upon this fixed cross where the average man is concerned, and he is very materialistic in his consciousness, and we have to bring that into understanding. Very materialistic, yes, materialistic. All right. The energy let loose through this cross is stupendous. in its effects. And we're just, as far as humanity is concerned, moving onto this cross. Of course, many human beings, and still for many, many years, how many years, maybe even millions of years, even until the next round, we'll be upon the common or mutable cross. But humanity can be looked at holistically and seen to be rising onto the fixed cross through its more advanced members. At least that type of energy can be released within humanity to a significant extent. The energy let loose through this cross is stupendous in its effects, and disciples such as we are intending to be are functioning under the energies of the fixed cross when we are truly being disciples, producing finally the great reversal and renunciation. Now, the reversal, maybe not just the early reversal, which is occurring around the period of the fifth petal and preparing for the first initiation, but maybe a great reversal where human incarnation is no longer needed. And of course, the great renunciation is the fourth initiation. So, as I said earlier, the fixed cross seems to lead to the fourth initiation, though it is not the cross on which the fourth initiation is taken. But then, neither is the cardinal cross. The man is in no man's land, in a way, and has to form his own cross. He's placed upon the cross of his own making, in a way. In this cross, Taurus is the initiator. Always, you know, it's either going to be Aries, Taurus, or Gemini, the first three signs, which are the initiators of the three types of crosses. In this cross, Taurus is the initiator for impulses, the will. When we use a word like impulse, it doesn't necessarily mean the impulse of desire. The term impulse does not necessarily mean the impulse of desire. For Taurus, impulses, the will, producing movement and momentum. And we think then for a moment of the hammer stroke of Vulcan, which sets all things in motion, sets all things vibrating. And momentum is one of those factors which is much related to Taurus. Think about that for a moment. Momentum related to Taurus, because although it may take a while for the Taurian individual to get moving, once it is moving, that motion carries through and is very difficult to stop. The factor of inertia is not only applied to inactivity. Inertia is sometimes defined as the tendency of a body at rest to remain at rest, but it can also be defined as the tendency of a body in motion to remain in motion. And that is interesting to consider. So once Taurus is moving, it does have a certain amount of weight and materiality which keeps it moving forward, resisting the attempt to stop it. So Taurus is the initiator, impulsing the will, which at last must be used to a significant extent upon this fixed cross, although technically it is not the cross of the will per se. It's the cross of the soul, and yet without the use of the will, the achievements to be achieved upon the fixed cross cannot be achieved, producing movement and momentum. You have, if I may repeat earlier implications, the following conditions and correspondences in connection with the three crosses. It seems that Master DK is now preparing us for some of the discussion of the crosses to come. In the second part of the book. The cardinal cross, spirit, will, Shambhala. And I'd like to just get these lined up a little bit, if that's possible. Not sure whether it is. So we have the cardinal cross, spirit, will, Shambhala. The fixed cross, soul, consciousness hierarchy. The immutable cross is the cross of form, of activity per se, and of humanity, and we can relate humanity to the third ray. And hierarchy to the second ray, of course, and Shambhala naturally to the first. But the activity aspect is the third, and the third ray is closely identified with this third immutable cross. The second ray, interestingly, with the fixed cross, because it is the cross on which the soul emerges and on which consciousness is deepened. And finally, although there is the emergence of a degree of will upon the fixed cross, because you need that as an initiate of the third, or, well, even from the second degree, the will is emerging over desire. You need that as an initiate of the second, third, or fourth degree. The real will, in a way that probably humanity cannot yet understand, emerges on the cardinal cross, and probably this cross is really mounted after the fourth initiation, and upon when one takes the fifth initiation, the cardinal cross is experienced as one's own true cross. Okay, we're getting there for our first part of 108. The initiate is one who is in process of relating consciously and effectively to all these three within himself. Now, this is something we have to realize, that spiritual achievement is cumulative. And we're not going to drop the abilities achieved upon the common cross or the fixed cross when we mount the mutable cross. It's a bit like the rulerships. If we're in Aquarius, then Uranus is the ruler. And now the Jupiterian rulership emerges. It doesn't mean that the Uranian abilities and tendencies will suddenly be abandoned. They will be incorporated into a larger orientation provided by Jupiter, just as Jupiter will be incorporated along with Uranus into the hierarchical orientation provided by the Moon, but really provided by three planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Vulcan. And thus it would go for all the rulerships. They don't suddenly leave off. They are, when the new ruler comes in, they are lifted to a higher turn of the spiral. Okay, so man, the initiate is one who is in process of relating consciously and effectively all these three within himself. The initiate has ever wider responsibilities and is not allowed to relinquish his gains. He is not attached to his gains, but he utilizes those gains from a higher, within a higher context. Man, the essential triangle of energy. So that can be man the monad or man the soul. Depends on what we mean by essential. Man the square, man as the personality, man upon the cross, whatever cross it may be, and finally, man the five-pointed star. He is the higher initiate coming under the planetary logos, who represents himself as a five-pointed star. So let's put this in here. Yeah, the planetary logos represented as a five-pointed star. Man, the essential triangle of energy, yes. Well, if we're really going to talk about essence, we have to talk about man beginning as the monad, who is the essential triangle of energy. Man, as the square, is the lower quaternary, is what we call personality with its three divisions, mind, emotions, and etheric physical nature. Man upon the cross, learning to make the transition from identification with his lunar lords into identification as the soul. And finally, man the five-pointed star. Man the five-pointed star is the conscious soul. That's one way of looking at it. Man the five-pointed star is identified as the soul. In these four symbolic forms lie the whole history of the fourth kingdom in nature, impulsed from the essential triangular level, impulsed from the monadic level at first. Impulsed from the monadic level. And then, you know, taking up temporary resonance in another square, which the four lower kingdoms of nature, interestingly. The so-called in-metallization of the monad, the in-vegetalization of the monad, the in-zoonation of the monad, and finally the monad passing through the human kingdom. That provides yet another square, doesn't it? Okay. In these four symbolic forms lies the whole history of the fourth kingdom of nature. And one finds oneself upon the cross in order to detach. In order to detach from that which the cross represents. In other words, the cross will represent the four lower kingdoms of nature. It can represent the four elements, but one can no longer, let's call it this way, one can no longer grasp because the hands are immobilized. And one can no longer run on the errands prompted by these lower energies because the feet are immobilized as well. But the head can still think and realize what is happening. So, in these four symbolic forms lies the whole history of the triangle, of the fourth kingdom of nature. The triangle and the star are subjective expressions of a fixed consciousness, focused in reality, while the square and the cross are objective expressions of the man focused outwardly. So we have two and two, right? Okay, two and two. The triangle is the symbol of the monad, although so is unity. The star is the symbol of the soul. The square is the symbol of the personality. And the cross is the symbol of the means of transition from the personality into still higher possibilities of the triangle, of the five-pointed star, and eventually the higher triangle. So let us call this the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 108A, and we are on page 383, and we will move forward and begin Esoteric Astrology 108B, page 383. And we will, as we sometimes do, close with a great invocation. Maybe this is a way of doing that. No, that's not the way of doing it. A better way to do it is this way. Uh-huh. Oh, never thought it would be so difficult to find a great invocation here. Okay, it'll appear in a moment. Probably so many of us know it already, right? But nevertheless, okay. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. And now we will continue just a little while.